From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me on the show this week are Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor, and Tom DeFrank, Contributing Editor at National Journal. And here are the issues. President Trump ordered a missile attack on the Syrian air base from which a Syrian chemical attack allegedly had been launched that killed 85 people, including 27 children. Trump said, quote, there can be no dispute, unquote, that Syria used banned chemical weapons. In Florida, Trump met for the first time with President Xi Jinping of China for a two-day summit. In Washington, a Colorado judge was headed to the Supreme Court after Republicans killed an attempt to block the judge's confirmation. And in Washington, Steve Bannon, the leader of the populist faction among White House aides, was removed from membership on the National Security Council. Well, Tom, let me ask you about this militarily. I was surprised to find that the airbase that was struck was only one of six that the Syrians have. I assume Russian planes were at others. I mean, it seemed, what were there, nearly 60 missiles fired, but it wasn't the kind of attack we saw, for instance, that led to the soften up Iraq before the invasion there in 2003.
Well, yes, this was what the Pentagon likes to call, and the Trump administration is already calling it, a proportionate response, proportionate to the offense being the gassing of Syrian civilians, men, women, children. There's heart-wrenching video of dying children, and President Trump, who watches a lot of television, is a creature of that sort of world, was profoundly moved. And in a press conference in the Rose Garden earlier in the week with King Abdullah II of Jordan, he was very emphatic about what a heinous act this was. It was a war crime, and that he was going to do something. I mean, President Trump has said and ran on it during his campaign the belief that President Obama was just too passive in a variety of areas, and one of which was the Middle East, and especially Syria. So we will have to see what happens next. There's a reason why the U.S. did not do aggressive military action in Syria on President Obama's watch, and that was because he thought it would lead to a wider conflict. We will see. My personal view is that this will be good for Trump politically, but it'll also give Vladimir Putin something to think about, because Putin, whatever else he is, he reacts to power, he feeds on weakness, and he is somewhat taken aback by power by another adversary. And so the United States has acted in a way that he has not been used to seeing the United States act. And we'll have to see. There'll be shoes to drop, but it's too early to know what they are.
Well, Linda, I was going to ask you a little more about the attack, but Tom has turned right to the Russians and Putin.
Right.
And, of course, one of the Russian spokesmen said that the Syrians didn't have any chemical weapons, and this was an attack on the Syria's sovereignty and so on.
Right. Now, this is a really important moment, not just for Trump, but for the U.S. relationship with Russia. And Russia's involvement in Syria is very important to the Russian sense of itself in the world, and Trump has gone directly at the heart of that by launching these missile attacks in light of the chemical attack. So for the Russians to say that the Syrians didn't have chemical weapons is, of course, absurd. We have the evidence. The Turks gave us this evidence. They did examinations of the bodies. They've told us it was sarin gas. And the Turks have been increasingly friendly to Russia. So the Russians are, I think, pretty isolated in their support for Syria in this case.
Tom, you know, it's only, what, 5 days before this attack, maybe it was fewer than that, where at least the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, was saying, well, it's up to the Syrian people to decide who's going to rule the country there and so on. And it seemed the farthest thing from a military intervention,
right?
Which raises this question. Was this a rash decision by President Trump?
I don't think it was rash, but it was quick. And as you say, it was a rapid turnaround from the signal that many read from Secretary of State Tillerson. Critics of the Trump administration say his statement basically gave Assad a green light to do horrible things. And within days, a handful of days, two or three, these chemical attacks occurred. Well, you can be sure that the policy's changed. And Mr. Tillerson, I believe, is going to be in Moscow next week or somewhere where he's meeting with President Putin. And the message is going to be, according to what the State Department is now saying, that you got to get your client in line, that you are complicit either by design or by negligence or by incompetence, which is a word Tillerson has used, that you're an unindicted co-conspirator, in effect. And you can be sure Mr. Putin is not going to like to hear that.
Now, Linda, Tillerson does know Putin, doesn't he? I think he's met with him a number of times. Tillerson, of course, was the head of ExxonMobil, the world's the largest energy company, specializing in oil, of course. And now he's going to see Putin. I'm not sure whether that adds that much to it that Tillerson knows Putin, but it makes an interesting part of it.
Right. So Tillerson, as the CEO of ExxonMobil, had cut some deals in Russia, a big energy country, obviously. So they know each other in that context. And in fact, Putin had given Tillerson the Order of Friendship a while back, which people made a big deal out of that in light of all the other Trump associates' connections to Russia. But I actually don't make a huge deal of that. Gives these away like candy bars, I think, to people he wants to curry favor with, especially a powerful American businessman. Mm-hmm. Now, fast forward to Tillerson as Secretary of State, who is still kind of feeling his way in this very different context of diplomacy and sending signals. This meeting with Putin next week is very important. It's, for some, is seen almost as a proxy of a Trump-Putin meeting, the first chance for Putin to size up Tillerson as a representative of Trump and to see what kind of leverage he has, what he can get away with, what he can't. You can bet that Tillerson will deliver a very strong message.
Tom, what about the Middle East? Under President Obama, the United States had gradually withdrawn from being a large player in the Middle East. I mean, the U.S. is still a large player, but not as large player in the Middle East. And now we have talk, at least in a Wall Street Journal editorial, that talked of a potential coalition to oppose the Iran-Russia-Syria coalition. And this coalition would be Saudi Arabia, the Gulf states, Turkey. Didn't mention Israel, but I don't know. It seems I wouldn't count on this coalition coming together real soon.
Well, it sounds very good, Fred, but I agree with you. I don't think that's going to happen. But it's no doubt that many of the nations you just mentioned are very fearful of Iran. And I think the message that Secretary Tillerson is going to be carrying to Moscow is you're complicit in Syria and Iran doing bad things. You're you're really a force for destabilization in the region, and you've got to do something about that. I don't think there's going to be a grand coalition. I mean, if there were a grand coalition, it might be going after ISIS in a more aggressive way. But I think a large-scale intervention in the Syrian civil war is probably not in the cards at the moment. But there could be more American airstrikes. The way these things always work is you can be sure that, as we're talking now, U.S. reconnaissance aircraft are doing bomb damage assessment, and they're going to know what went well and what may have missed a target in this airfield. And so I would just think that there might be some more. But the most important thing at the moment is, what does Assad do? What does President Assad do? Mm-hmm. Does he strike back? And what do the Russians do also? Because the Russians, Syria has very sophisticated Russian-built and installed air defense systems. And U.S. Naval and Air Force aviation planes have been flying all over Syria fighting ISIS, flying all through Syrian airspace. And the Russians and the Syrians have not done anything about that because they were supposedly fighting the common foe, ISIS. We'll have to see. Shoes will drop, but it's too early to know how many and with how much of a thud.
Linda, I'll have to say this for me, this intervention by President Trump in the Middle East, in Syria, sort of redefines for me what the Trump foreign policy may be like. I never thought he was an isolationist, but when he talked about America first, it was that America was going to really be narrow the places where it would be active and intervene and so on. And I'll have to say Syria wasn't one of them.
Right. No, I mean, I think you're seeing some unhappy remarks from the America First crowd, members of the House Freedom Caucus, the hard right conservatives who do not want the United States acting as the policeman of the world. And even in the face of terrible human rights atrocities, going after them with military power. So we've got this, I think it shows that Trump's foreign policy was more slogan than actual policy, and that he's still trying to figure out what he thinks and what he's about. I thought his comments after the airstrikes were interesting when he talked about, well, he talked about this actually in his meeting with King Abdullah, the beautiful children who had been killed. I mean, you hear this from him at times, these emotional responses to images that he sees on television, which shows that he has a heart, but it also shows, I think, that he can be swayed in very significant foreign policy decisions.
Tom, what about it? Are we seeing a different foreign policy and military policy from the one that we were led to expect by Trump and his campaign and really almost everything he said up to now?
Well, too early to tell, Fred. I mean, I think you could argue that this is a one-shot arrangement. I don't think President Trump is ready to start intervening around the world with more aggressive diplomacy and more aggressive military action. I still think he's not leaning that way, but there are exceptions, and this is clearly one of those exceptions. I think he is an America First guy, but I think he understands that it's important at some level in some limited way for America to reassert its leadership in the world, and I think he is going to do some of this because of that.
In his statement, of course, he insisted, I think, very strongly that this was in America's interest. In other words, it was, I think he was trying to meld it with what he said before about his America First foreign policy.
Right.
We'll have more in just a minute. First, a reminder that you're listening to Issues in the News, coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your moderator, Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me on the show today are Tom DeFrank of National Journal and Linda Fellman of the Christian Science Monitor. And this is a reminder, you can listen to Issues online as a podcast. The program is also available for free download on iTunes. Just click the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. Well, I was surprised with what President Trump said after his first session of talks with the Chinese leader, and he came out of it and said, "I got nothing." This is not what, Linda, what presidents usually say. It's usually the happy talk about how they got along well and the countries have a wonderful future dealing with each other. But what do you make of these talks?
Well, it's a very important moment for U.S.-Chinese relations. Trump spent his entire campaign accusing the Chinese of being currency manipulators and of, I think at one point he talked about them raping America in flooding American markets with cheap Chinese goods. And then, of course, there's North Korea shooting off its missiles, allegedly trying to build nuclear weapons that can reach American shores. So this is in China as the main patron of North Korea. So this is an important meeting, overshadowed, obviously, by the airstrikes on Syria. But I think, you know, that will continue. The meeting will take place, will continue to take place, and we'll see what happens.
Tom, these two leaders have been described as the most important leaders in the world. You know, before, and I mean, not that many years ago, it was the American president and the leader of the Soviet Union and then of Russia, and now it's the U.S. and China. One of the things that Trump wants is to get the Chinese to put a lot of pressure on North Korea to stop their saber rattling and testing of nuclear weapons and firing of missiles and so on and all of that. He doesn't want the Chinese have been reluctant to do that.
They have been, and it's not clear why they are. Maybe they were waiting to see how President Trump will react here and there. I mean, one thing Trump has made very clear is he does not like the Chinese buildup in the South China Sea.
Yeah, that too, yeah.
Building bases and building military facilities on some of these islands, even building new islands more or less from scratch in areas that are very concerning to the Philippines, to Japan, to Korea, to even to Australia. And President Trump wants that to stop. And I think President Xi has no intention of doing that. So it's probably going to be instructive that the Syrian attacks began right in the middle of these talks with the Chinese. This will give the Chinese something to chew on. But for the most part, you're right. The Chinese are reluctant to lean on North Korea. And Trump's attitude is you're the only you're the only superpower who can do this, and you have to step up and do it. And so we'll just see. This is going to be very interesting to see what the readout on these talks with the Chinese tells us.
You know, I have a feeling that after Trump saying, I got nothing, when they get around to the, as Tom says, the readout after the talks, it'll be a lot of happy talk.
There's no doubt. But what I kind of like about Trump is that he can just, he's honest in some ways. He says what he's thinking, even if it's very much not part of the usual diplomatic blather that you get out of meetings like this. But in terms of, I think, why China is not willing to lean on North Korea as much as the United States was like, is that China fears chaos on its border. And I think they don't want to take out the Kim Jong-un regime and have people, North Koreans, flooding into China, or, you know, they sort of want to keep North Korea stable and therefore aren't willing to go after, you know, really lean on them as hard as they could in terms of, say, trade sanctions.
Okay, let's turn to Neil Gorsuch going on the Supreme Court, and we have another issue we want to talk about, Steve Bannon, so I don't want to spend much time on this Supreme Court thing, as important as it is, but there was some precedent shattered, and he was filibustered. In other words, the Democrats tried to block it by continuing to talk, and that on the floor. So ultimately, it would have to be withdrawn. I'm already saying more than I want to about this. Tom, what about it?
Well, I say a pox on all of them. The Democrats and the Republicans are both playing partisan politics. You can be sure that if a President Hillary Clinton had nominated a judge that the Republicans didn't like, the Republicans would be behaving in the exact same way that the Democrats are behaving now. So this is all about politics. The bottom line is there will be a new member of the Supreme Court who replaces the ideology of the late Antonin Scalia. So the balance of power on the court will be restored. The real fight is going to be the next nominee, whoever he or she is, whenever that is, because that nominee will fundamentally alter the balance of the Supreme Court for a quarter century at least. And
make the court more conservative, perhaps.
Oh, I think almost with a certainty. So the Democrats, I think, I wouldn't call them half-hearted, because they knew they, one way or the other, they were going to lose this nomination, but they had to begin at least a filibuster to show their base that they were willing to take on Trump. But I think they will save most of their ammunition for the next one.
Linda, you can say something about the Supreme Court if you want, or turn to Steve Bannon, who is such an interesting and controversial figure in Washington. It was strange when he was put on the National Security Council to be a member of it, and officials who usually are military and diplomatic officials who usually are on it were not put there. Well, this has all been changed now.
Right. So we're 77 days into the Trump administration, and it's still kind of this kaleidoscope of characters there in the White House. I mean, we get the daily reports of mainly unnamed sources telling us about the chaos at the White House. Steve Bannon is a controversial figure. Reportedly, President Trump doesn't like the fact that he is sometimes referred to as President Bannon. He is feared by the left as somebody who is they believe, nationalist, racist, misogynist, name your ist. But so Bannon is put on this principals committee, and then he's taken off. There's the spin is that he had been put there to keep an eye on Mike Flynn, mm-hmm. the now departed national security advisor. Mm. I'm not sure I believe that.
Yeah, I'm not sure I do either.
But it's, you know, it's yet more palace intrigue around the so-called Democrats. So Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, his daughter Ivanka, Gary Cohn, economic advisor, are moderate in some cases, mm-hmm. viewed as liberals versus...
Well, he's a Democrat.
Yes, Gary Cohn's a Democrat, Jared Kushner's a Democrat. So mm-hmm. we have this weird White House of differing points of view, mm-hmm. which supposedly Trump likes. He likes mm-hmm. to get different views, mm-hmm. and then he kind of sorts mm-hmm. it through what he wants to do. So I say it's a big soap yeah, opera.
Indeed it is. You know, I think Steve Bannon, Tom, may be on thin ice for this reason, all the characters at the White House that Linda was mentioning, Jared Kushner and the president's daughter and Gary Cohn, the economics guy, they are pulling the president toward a more conventional type of moderation or conservatism. And Steve Bannon, of course, was the one who embraced and still does the most populist, nationalist, all the things that Linda mentioned. But the president's moving away from him.
Well, and I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One is the Bannon blueprint hasn't worked. We'll have to see what his poll numbers turn out to be after the Syrian airstrike. I suspect he'll do a little better in the polls. But before the airstrikes, President Trump's poll ratings were the lowest of any president in history at this point. And let's face it, I've covered 10 presidents now. Trump is my 10th president, and I have never covered a president who lost his national security advisor after 24 days for lying to the vice president.
Picky.
Whatever else that is, that suggests chaos. And Trump doesn't like the chaos. There was a report a few days ago where Trump is calling old friends at night and say, why is this happening and what do you think of my staff? I had a fascinating interview yesterday with someone who is very, not on the White House staff, but he knows a lot of them. And I said, why is Bannon still there? Mm. Because the case against Bannon continues to grow. And I agree mm-hmm. with you. I think he's starting to be on a little thin ice, Fred. And this guy said, Bannon is the interpreter for the little people who Trump thinks elected him. Mm-hmm. And I said, who are those people? He said, well, those are the out-of-work steel workers and coal miners in places like, as we all know, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, who turned the tide for Trump in the last election. He said, these are the people who haven't had a good job since they got laid off from a $40 an hour job at the steel mill 5 years mm-hmm. ago. And Trump believes those are the people that put him into the White House and that Bannon is their spokesman. And mm-hmm. He said Bannon is the advocate for the little guy in Trump's head. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be very hard for President Trump to be dissuaded. But the process is ongoing to do something about Bannon, who, whatever else he is a controversial, disruptive, and he's got some people around him in the White House, some acolytes who not the best and the brightest is all I will say.
Linda, we always have factions mm-hmm. in a White House, mm-hmm. and they're usually very well defined. And this one it is becoming well defined as well. And in Republican administrations, it's usually the more moderate faction that prevails. It did in the Reagan White House with Jim Baker as chief of staff, and I think it did in the as well in the two Bush White Houses. Mm-hmm. And what it means is, you know, it was different in the Reagan White House. The conservative faction was led by Ed Meese, who mm-hmm. later became Attorney General, but he was personally very close to mm-hmm. President Reagan. Somehow, I don't think Steve Bannon has that relationship with President Trump, which might be crucial to his staying on the White House staff.
Right. I mean, it's important to remember that Steve Bannon only joined the Trump campaign last August. Mm-hmm. They do not have a long relationship. And I would actually not be surprised to wake up one morning and see that Bannon is gone. Either he's resigned or been fired. Mm-hmm. And Trump has other people who can be the whisperers, he's got Kellyanne Conway and others. So I don't think Bannon is indispensable.
Tom, I don't think he's indispensable either. But it's just fascinating to watch this. And I think it's going to be hard for Bannon to stay. But look, Trump has embraced him. And I think Trump gives him a lot of credit for his election.
Exactly.
He changed the campaign a lot.
He does, Fred, and Trump prizes loyalty, but mm-hmm. Trump is beginning to realize that loyalty only works so far. I mean, he was very loyal to Mike Flynn, but that was a bad choice as national security advisor. So I think this is part of the learning curve of a president, mm-hmm. and more of this, we'll see more of this.
Well, you know, the press has been calling this civil war inside the White House. I think that's a little exaggerated, but there's a lot of fighting going on. Anyway, that's all the time we have. Joining us today were Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief of the Christian Science Monitor, and Tom DeFrank, Contributing Editor at National Journal. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Thank you for listening.